available a little sooner.
Okay, and anybody have any, the only question I guess would be 30 versus 60. What would happen, what would be the effect if we moved it to 30 as opposed to 60?
We would naturally prefer the 60. That's over the biennium, and that's 30 a year. The state of Washington budgets on an annual basis, and they, I don't know if it's in the letter from the state of Washington or not, but anyway, we think that we can justify the need for $60,000 for the biennium.
If the money is appropriated to the executive department, I think they'll only release it on a, is it a quarterly basis? They don't release the money all at once, do they?
Correct, Mr. Chairman. They would make it subject to the allotment control system, and they would ask for an allotment plan and stagger the money no more often than quarterly.
Okay, so that gives some additional budget control. Any objection to amending the bill on line 5, removing the Metropolitan Services District and inserting the Executive Department?
Mr. Chairman, I would suggest that you insert before the word Metropolitan Executive Department for payment to the...
Okay, to the Executive Department for payment to the Metropolitan Services District. Any objections to that amendment? Okay, hearing none, consider it adopted. Any objections to adding an emergency clause to the bill? Okay, hearing none, we'll add an emergency clause to the bill. And now it's the issue of appropriation 30 versus 60. Any thoughts one way or the other?
Bill says, now you say that we've got that kind of limit or
actually,
discussion?
I don't think so. Okay. $60,000 it is. Now we have the motion to move the bill, for Senate Bill 479, to the full committee as amended. Any objections? Hearing none, so ordered. And Senator Foblish or Yee, anyone you want to carry it? Senator Yee? Mm-hmm. Senator Yee will carry it in full committee.
And then Senator Otto can carry on the floor.
Senator Otto, I'm sure, would be glad to carry it on the floor unless you have an objection. Anybody in the House side that you... is familiar with this committee?
I don't know of anyone over there.
We might want to school somebody.
Could I ask a question? I never heard that last motion. Did you approve the 30 or
the
60? The 60.
60,000.
Good. Thank you.
And I think there's a degree of comfort since it's with the executive department. They don't write these huge checks. They give it out little bitty tiny allotments and such.
I thought we amended it to say 30. Oh, it's his recommendation. But
well, no, the question was whether or not it made any difference. Apparently it didn't.
So we made it 60.
Yes, ma'am.
Oh, okay.
You need anything in Albany you'd like to put in this bill?
Oh.
Covered bridges?
Any covered bridges or anything?
It's taken care of.
MSD, do you guys reach down that far? Okay. Any additional business?
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
We're adjourned. What the heck bill are we on?
The first one is the
2257. House Bill 2257, Maynard Hammer.
Mr. Chair, members of the Ways and Means Subcommittee, I'm Maynard Hammer, Administrator of Facilities Division and Department of General Services. With me is Bill Nickelberry, our lands manager. I'm here to testify in support of House Bill 2257. We are not asking for any additional money, nor are we asking for any additional position authority. excuse me. These positions were included in our operating budget. We were here because, as I understand it, because of a phrase in the bill itself that states that the department will assess land-owning agencies for the expenses of this program. the department generally has the ability to assess at any rate, and for the next biennium, we are making enough money off of service and management fees for the other agencies that Bill is working with to pay for these positions. So we are here because of the phrase, as I understand it, that we will assess other agencies. This bill does not give any additional authority to the Department of General Services, nor does it take any authority away from any other state agency. It takes three separate processes for disposing of surplus state lands that are separately defined in the statute and simply combines them into one clear process. It keeps the current priority of state agencies, local jurisdiction, and public proposal for land disposal.
Okay, Maynard, I was a little confused by your comment with respect to the no, I just went brain dead. The language you were referring to in the bill, where is it? The assessment procedure.
It's in section 13.
Yes. 13. 13, line 16 on page 5 of the A. Engrossed version. It reads, the department may apportion to each state agency owning real property its contribution to reimburse the department for the costs incurred in maintaining the real property inventory set forth in subsections 1 and 2 of this section.
Okay. And the significance of this?
Mr. Chairman, this is the probably the reason this bill was referred to Ways and Means, as Maynard mentioned. This is a bill that does some housekeeping that goes along with the attempt on the part of the Executive Department and General Services at the direction of the legislature to consolidate management of state surplus lands and to clarify that consolidation. You'll remember that we passed out a bill last week, I believe it was, transferring the Boardman property officially there. This is all related to clarifying General Services' role as the manager of state surplus properties. But because there is this element that deals with funding in Section 13, the bill had a subsequent referral to Ways and Means. The agency does not anticipate charging the agencies according to the sections in here that allow that charge, so long as they have sufficient revenue from the sale and management of surplus property. It shouldn't be necessary for them to charge the agencies, but if they eventually did have to, then that would be built into their regular assessment of state agencies. But there's no anticipation of them doing that in 91, 93, and probably not thereafter. But there is always the potential of that, but not certainly in the next biennium.
That's correct.
Well, Maynard, why wouldn't we go ahead and apportion the cost to each of the agencies?
Mr. Chair, we certainly could assess, but the way the revenues, and I have a handout if the committee wishes to see who we're working with and the nature of the fees, but the fees from the transactions at this point indicate just reimbursing for the program makes it not necessary to levy an assessment.
Mr. Chairman, a further reason is that if the revenue can be generated due to improvements in management and from the lease or sale of property, then they would not have to assess the state agencies, and we wouldn't have to have general fund appropriations to cover those assessments.
Okay. I guess my opinion is, so what? I mean,
saves general
fund money.
It
seems to be there's a policy. Well, yeah, I guess that's where we're back to the issue of saving general fund money for agencies that have property and are also generally funded or have a portion of general fund. They would be paying part of that to the department for this.
Right. Actually, what the assessment is for general services maintenance of an inventory, yeah, that is kept up to date. And so Section 13 deals with that. And what general services is saying is that they don't need to assess that as so long as the land management section can be funded from the proceeds of the sale of land and from the management revenues, such as the administrative fee that comes in from the Boeing Corporation on the Space Age property and so forth. So long as they have sufficient revenue from their management activities to fund the program from outside sources, then there is no need for the state agencies to fund the element of the bill that requires them to have an up-to-date inventory of land.
Well, I guess my concern in future bienniums, not that anybody would ever do this in the Department of General Services, is to continue to have your management revenues sufficient to cover the program, but because the law would now say may apportion, you can not only keep the management monies, but then also apportion the costs out and have some kind of a windfall. I'm sure nobody would ever do that, but the bill would allow it.
Mr. Chair, I think that's a point that we need to be conscious of. And another way of looking at this is if you look at the nature of the kind of fees that we're getting, by statute, in general, revenues from rents or leases from idle state property go into the General Services operating account. If it's a sale of surplus property, an outright sale, it goes into the capital projects fund for future reinvestment into facilities. If we can support the program out of the transactions themselves, then we really are helping agencies not have to pay any more directly out of their own pocketbooks, if you will, although your point is very well taken. The bill allows some new language that says the Department of General Services and any agency who is disposing of idle property can negotiate for using proceeds from the disposition of real property for that agency's general purposes, so that it's not dead set now in this age of Measure 5 environment that everything automatically goes into the Capital Projects Fund to be distributed among all state agencies.
You know what I wouldn't like or wouldn't mind seeing in here is something that would tie the May apportion to a reduction in sufficient revenues from your management activities.
Mr. Chairman, I believe that in Section 3, mm-hmm. the Department may apportion to each state agency owning real property its contribution to reimburse the Department for the costs incurred in maintaining the real property inventory set forth in subsections 1 and 2. To clarify, are you trying to then state that you wouldn't want that revenue to be used in lieu of outside revenue that's coming from management? And
well, maybe I'm missing the point. You're currently covering the cost of the program with management savings or generated revenues or whatever we call it. I don't know what the heck.
Callahan Center savings.
Okay, whatever. And what I'm saying is that if those revenues fall off and they're no longer sufficient to operate the program, then the department may apportion these costs out to state agencies, as opposed to just allowing both, the potential for both.
There are really two parts to this program, Mr. Chair. One is the maintenance of a clearinghouse, public information to other agencies, and an inventory of surplus and idle and managed state lands, which would not have a revenue source of its own, and the other would be the actual transactions where we're actively managing land or disposing the property where, if the transactions are consummated, there would be a revenue flow. And at present, we generally have the ability to assess agencies to carry out program transactions. I'm not sure technically how to address your concern with the language here.
I don't know either.
I should point out, Mr. Chairman, also that the revenues from the sale, that this is relatively new in terms of the Department of General Services having sole responsibility for managing the surplus properties. And, for instance, Callahan hasn't been sold yet. And so some of these revenues, this program started in the current biennium as a result of the budget note last biennium. And these revenues are projected revenues, and as opposed to in-the-pocket revenues as it is right now. And so there is somewhat of a different element in looking at the part of the bill that deals with the management and the improvements in the management of land as opposed to the maintenance of an inventory, which has always been a requirement, but now they're requiring that rather than it be an annual report, it is to be a constantly updated, up-to-date inventory of all state surplus lands. There's a process by which the other agencies have to submit that are not under this, that have surplus lands that General Services would not administer, have to report and so forth. So they're sort of separate functions, but what they're saying right now is that in the immediate future they anticipate that they won't need to make the assessment. But if they don't have the revenue, they still have the legislative mandate to keep the inventory.
Yeah, and I guess it's still back to the same point. I'm trying to prevent the next legislature, 1993, looking at your budget, saying, by golly, we've got this income from this program over here, which was currently funding this activity, and we're also raising more revenue by assessing the cost of the program out. I mean, maybe the committee doesn't. I mean, I don't really care at this particular point in time. And maybe we need something in the staff measure analysis that connects back to the budget report.
I suppose one question that Maynard could respond to, having gone through the substantive committee hearings, is was there an intention on the part of the writers of the bill or the drafters of the bill in putting in this method of funding the inventory to separate those two, and is General Service simply voluntarily not separating them?
Mr. Chair, the genesis of this bill is we pre-session filed it in an attempt to clarify our statute. The original language said that the program would be financed out of the proceeds of transactions. In discussing the bill as we worked through the drafts, we agreed not to use that language because of the fear that the department would at some point in the future would have an incentive to try to dispose of real property to finance staff. That language was dropped. This language was left in. The two substantive committees did not discuss this issue. The Committee on State and Federal Affairs in the House and the Government Operations Committee in the Senate, and neither one took up the issue of the funding source.
Well, in any event, you're going to have to draft rules for this function. Maybe in your rules making drafting, that portion of it, you can address the parameters. I guess I just want it clear that a future Ways and Means Committee, when the General Service budget's in front of us, that something that traces back to this bill and its origin.
Mr. Chair, I can commit to you to trying to find some way to assure that we don't over budget for this program. I think the normal budgetary review wouldn't let us, but I don't think we should be enabled to attempt to either. I think your point is well taken in that attempt. The intent certainly is not to do that. I'll try to find some rule language or something that would do that.
Okay, any questions?
Just one, Mr.
Representative Shipwright.
Maynard, in Section 6, why are there certain properties that do not fall under your purview of the bill?
Mr. Chair, Representative Shipwreck.
Page 3, middle of the page. 20 through 26.
This is existing law. And our initial intent with this bill was to try to clarify. When we tried to sell the Callahan Center, We had a variety of definitions of what we were trying to do. The property disposal of that nature had not been undertaken by any historical record that I could find, and we had three different hoops to jump through, and it confused us. We came to the emergency board for consultation. We were both confused there, and the public was confused. So we attempted to clarify the statute without really getting into a protracted statutory discussion on changing current law.
Did you want to delete higher ed out of here?
No, I just, the bill isn't, does not make a global change in the way the state does business.
That's correct.
Mr. Chairman, the primary reason for these agencies being separate is because of the large amount of land that they own and manage themselves, and General Services would have to have a large duplicative staff if they were going to try to take care of, for instance, all the agricultural land owned by the state system of higher education. They own it in every county, and the state parks and so forth.
Someday we may very well come down to one agency that are doing all this. We could, never mind.
You're doing fine.
Would be very hard to do that in some cases without a large duplication of staff, because the agencies would still have the responsibility for working with their own land. But
another day.
Much of this also, Mr. Chair, is specialty property governed by programs. And while the comment has been made before, as Representative Shiprack indicated, it is not a global change. Many agencies we don't have to now are contacting Bill for advice and help on disposing of surplus property.
I believe the bill does also later on not exempt properties from reporting. And
how many committees has this been to? The House Committee on what? Housing?
Mr. Chair, it was the House Committee on State and Federal Affairs. It passed with no dissenting votes, and the Government Operations Committee on the Senate side the same.
Well, the Senate sent it down?
Yes, it has not been to the Senate floor yet.
Okay. Well, I'm satisfied. I don't want to restructure the entire bill at this point in time. I do want to just, for the purpose of the record, make sure that the Department of General Services doesn't see this as some kind of a way of raising revenue beyond what's necessary to run the program.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Yee?
Since the agencies are assessed for administration of this program, do they get any money back if the land is sold?
Mr. Chair, Senator Yee, the provision in this bill will allow the Department of General Services to negotiate with an agency if they have a particular use for money from a transaction where their land is sold. That's new in this bill because we think that's good public policy. Previously, the answer would have been no. The money automatically goes into either the operating account of the Department of General Services or to our capital projects fund to be reinvested in other facilities.
Oh, but if they have any use of money that relates to the ownership of the land, they can have some money back?
Mr. Chair, Senator Yee, the Department of General Services would be able to negotiate that with the agency under this bill. They could have it for certain program purposes.
So that relates to the ownership of the land. Because you don't want them to use for any program.
Oh, that's correct. That's correct.
Which section would that be?
What are we doing?
There is language in the bill that says the affected agency and Department of General Services may negotiate.
Use of the money.
It's existing language. It's not new language. That's why it's not highlighted.
I just want to make sure the money is not going to be used for any programs.
Mr. Chair, Senator Yee, it's in Section 10 on page 4, line 15. It's sub 3, notwithstanding the provisions of subsection 1 of this section, which talks about sale proceeds, less costs shall be deposited in the capital projects fund. The language and says that an agency may negotiate with the department to apply the proceeds of a sale, transfer, or lease of such surplus real property to another capital acquisition of that agency.
And it's subject to negotiation.
Yes.
Okay, work session, House Bill 2257.
Move it.
Okay. Senator Fogelich moves House Bill 2257 to the full committee, unamended, with a due pass recommendation to the Senate floor. Anybody like it? Hate it? I didn't hear any dissenting votes. I hit the gavel some kind. Nobody.
Objection.
Ah, good. Good. We're having too much fun.
Thanks, Mr. Chair.
You're welcome.
Who do you think will carry this?
I don't know. Senator Yee, Senator Fogelich.
The one who asks the most questions. People who ask questions can be rewarded with carrying the bill.
Senator Yee.
Thank you for the reward.
You're very welcome.
Can we operate under that rule from now on?
Who asks the most questions? That's not a bad idea.
That means everybody should shut up.
That means you're going to carry a lot of bills.
It's been to the house.
I think I've learned my lesson.
Okay, public hearing on Senate Bill 1142. We have Paul Snyder and how many other people here are like chief sponsors of this bill? Whoa, 1, 2, 3, 4.
Who's against it?
Does anybody hate this bill? No? Why don't we get the chief sponsors or tag team us or something?
What a motion.
Up here and tell them. No, let's find out what the bill does first, okay?
Do we have to go through formalities?
It would help.
Okay.
Well, Paul, why don't you come up here and drag whoever you want up with you? This is one, by the way, that we originally didn't hear because we thought some of the fines and such in here were part of Senate Bill 103.
And they are.
And we've since found out that they are not. So. Okay. Could I get everybody's name real quick? I know yours, Paul.
Yeah. I'm Val Salisbury with the League of Oregon Cities.
Okay, sir.
I'm Steve Telfer. I represent Legacy Health System.
Okay. All right. We have some others to testify. Okay. Tell us about this.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the subcommittee, for the record, I'm Paul Snyder, representing Association of Oregon Counties. 12 years ago, when I was an independent lobbyist, I represented a coalition of the State Sheriff's Association, Chiefs of Police, and Oregon Peace Officers Association. At that time, I remember a sheriff coming into the room very heated, saying that he had just received a bill for $11,500 for a prisoner who had never been booked into his facility and about whom he knew absolutely nothing. That's an example of a case that existed long before that discussion occurred and has existed unabated ever since then. In that situation, a man tried to rape a woman, and the city police came upon the scene, arrested the man, but not before the woman had stabbed him in the hand. The city police took the individual to the hospital in Portland, whereupon he incurred the bill for $11,500. Because the sheriff was the operator of the local correctional facility, the bill was sent to him, even though he had never heard of the individual. There have been changes in this law relating to this problem several times since 1979, but none of the changes have ever clarified the law or made it any easier for people to figure out who's responsible for these costs. What usually happens is that there will be a city police officer or a state police officer who gets involved with arresting an individual who is either injured before that time or is injured during the course of the arrest and taken to the hospital where the person gets a medical cost. The hospital bills the county third-party claims against the city or the state, and everybody goes to court and has a fight. Usually what happens is that they split the problem down the middle. The hospital might take 30 or 40 cents on the dollar in payment for its costs, and that 30 or 40 cents might be split between the city or the state or the county. But not after an awful lot of court costs are incurred by everybody, and the hospital winds up, well, the paying patients in the hospital wind up subsidizing the costs of the problem. It's not acceptable to anybody, and yet until this session, we couldn't come up with something that worked. We think 1142 will work, and this is what the bill does. In Section 1, it increases an existing corrections fee, a corrections fee that was created last session. The increase tracks with the same amount of money as the Board on Police Standards and Training receives now to fund its operation. Originally, when...
What is a corrections fee, Paul?
Mr. Chair, Senator Yee, this is a fee that's imposed, it's an assessment that's imposed on every fine or bail forfeiture or criminal conviction. It's in addition to the fine that the court sets, but it can be waived in the case that the individual doesn't have the money to pay either one. But it was created last session, and right now that assessment is paid to counties to pay for corrections,